Beasley on Dead Soul Social Club.
I shot a guy one time in his Adam's apple. See how long it would take him to die.
How long did it take?
2 minutes. He drowned, actually.
Drowned in his blood.
I was with somebody else. We had a $50 bet. I lost.
We talked about the tough and abusive childhood that Richard Kuklinski had, as well as the descent into the arms of the devil by embracing murder, theft, torture, and intimidation. We also found out about Richard's first wife and children, and about him getting involved with the DeCavalcante crime family of New Jersey. Tonight we are going to go deeper and talk about the man that Richard would become and the double life that he would end up leading. As man searches for motive, more men tear down the sun. As daylight becomes darkness, sometimes the black is just a means to the light. This is The Life and Horrors of Richard Kuklinski, Part 2. After marrying Linda, Richard tried to go straight and honest, and he started working for a trucking company where his primary role was lifting boxes. Although the role was unfulfilling in nature, Richard was content. While working there, he met Barbara, the company receptionist. She was friendly, but she was friendly to everyone. The boss of the company knew of Richard's check had passed and protectively warned him to stay away from Barbara. Richard, being married to Linda, had no intention of hitting on Barbara, of course. Not that he was seeped in values of monogamy, but at the same time, his thoughts never strayed away from a one-guy, one-woman ideal. Until, that is, his boss warned him away from Barbara. Richard instinctively told his boss to shove the job where he'd been working. He hated being told what to do. After all, very few people attempted to do it anymore. He went back that night with the intention of murdering him. But as he walked into the place, he bumped into Barbara again, and they got talking. He told Barbara he had lost his job for talking to her, and so, feeling sorry for him, she agreed to go on a date with him when he asked. So instead of killing his boss that night, he went to the movie theater with Barbara instead. His boss would never know how lucky he was, in one of the few lucky twists of fate that had involved the Iceman. So Richard and Barbara started dating. Now, Barbara was a well-brought-up lady from a respectable Italian Catholic family. She knew nothing of the world in which Richard operated, his background, or the evils that had forged him. But in his mind, he wanted her as a possession, and he would not take no for an answer. Richard, early on in the dating, was an attentive boyfriend. I would even go as far as calling him somewhat romantic. For example, he would often insist that restaurants play Lady by Kenny Rogers when Barbara walked in. He showered her with gifts of chocolates, flowers, cartoon dolls, steak dinners. But this, as you can imagine, wouldn't last for very long. It wouldn't last for very long before his controlling element and violent side would take over. By now, Richard had abandoned his wife and their children. He was dating Barbara and he actually felt affection for her. Although to say he left Linda solely because he fell in love with another woman isn't exactly the case, and I wouldn't want to simplify these events. Richard had actually come home several months before and discovered Linda having sex with a friend of his. Almost as if the pair either had a death wish or didn't know him at all. But surprisingly, he didn't kill them. In retaliation, he simply beat his friend unconscious, then proceeded to break as many of his bones as he possibly could. And he got through quite a fair few, too. Not without retribution, Linda was next. She was subjected to having both of her nipples cut off with a hunting knife at the hands of her husband, who then left her to bleed. They were quite possibly the luckiest victims of Richard, and no doubt didn't realize just how lucky they were at the time. Barbara was not convinced that Richard was the one for her. She tried to tell Richard that she liked him, but still wanted to see other people and not commit just yet. But she was in too deep. Richard refused to accept this, and while driving her home one night, Barbara later recalled, Richard pulled over, grabbed her by the throat, and without her even realizing it, slightly stabbed her in the back. The knife went in just an inch or so, and Barbara said that she didn't even feel the blade go in, it was so sharp. She just felt the blood run down her back. Richard told her that she was his, that she would not see anyone else, and that he owned her now. If she didn't comply, he would kill her, her family, and everyone who meant anything to her. It was Christmas now, so naturally Richard was invited to Barbara's family home. Richard recalled that everything was so alien to him, the family, them being nice to each other, the nice home and laughter. He had never seen anything like it before, which I feel is very telling of what he came from and who he was inside. Richard said of his first Christmas that he was so overwhelmed, he excused himself to go outside and sob like a baby. Out of the blue, Barbara fell pregnant. Horrified at the thought of marrying Richard, Barbara fled to her father's house in Miami. She was in hiding from Richard. She gave her mother explicit instructions not to tell Richard where she was, no matter what. Instead of searching for her, Richard, with a plan, just went to her mother's house and told her that Barbara was pregnant. As was the time and the family's faith, Barbara's mother could think of nothing worse than her daughter having a child out of wedlock. Nothing worse. So, incorrectly assuming that Barbara was in hiding due to the shame and seeing no way out of her situation, as Richard was a married man, and he didn't have the money for a divorce, she believed Richard when he told her he loved her daughter and wanted to marry her. So with that, she gave Richard the money for his divorce and also gave him Barbara's location. What's sad is that she did this, knowing full well that Richard was beating her daughter, but such was the time and expectation of married life. Richard showed up in Miami and Barbara accepted her fate, allowing Richard back into her life and eventually marrying him. Richard, like his parents had done before him, and like he had treated Linda, would eventually beat Barbara too. She would eventually lose the baby as a result of the abuse, as well as two more in quick succession. During the pregnancy for the third baby, the pregnancy was so far along that when he beat her, Barbara had a partial birth and the baby's leg actually fell out. It died shortly after, and the remainder of the child's body had to be surgically removed. Finally, the fourth pregnancy was a success, along with a further two following that. Barbara and Richard would have three children, Merrick, Chris, and Dwayne. Richard actually had affection for his family and loved his wife. Further, he loved his children, so much so that he never laid a hand on them. Richard would say that to ensure he never harmed his children, if he ever felt rage around them, he would punch himself in the face until he knocked himself unconscious, thus removing the rage. Unfortunately, Richard's children would later recall how their father used to viciously beat their mother in front of them, as well as smash furniture up around the house. They used to keep hidden packed bags around the house in case he killed their mother so they could immediately flee. Richard had a favourite child, Merrick, his oldest daughter, who he would sit with and talk daily, with Richard stroking her hair. She was the only child he ever opened up to and told about his past and why he was the way he was. Due to this, she was the only family member who would eventually forgive Richard for everything and said that she always loved him. By 1962, Richard wanted to go straight again, so he had a job arranged for him by Barbara's uncle at 20th Century's Film Lab in Manhattan. His job was to copy film reels for movie theaters, but like a moth to a flame, it wouldn't be long before crime beckoned again and he would start copying both Disney reels and also hardcore pornography, which included bestiality films among some of his bestsellers. Richard also started truck heists again, which quickly led to murder after a buyer refused to pay the agreed price for a shipment he stole. Richard, being Richard, quickly ran out of patience and shot the buyer and his two associates in the head. That switch in Richard's head had just been turned on again. With Richard now making porn movie copies, he came to the attention of the Gambino crime family in Manhattan. But we'll come to that in a little bit. While making another truck heist, this time for a shipment of Casio watches, which were high-tech at the time, the buyer told Richard to meet him at a farm for payment. When Richard arrived, the truck was gone and the buyer played ignorant to what happened to it, and he held back on the money. Not prepared to play games, Richard tied him to a chair immediately and retrieved two road flares from his car. What happened next defies belief. Richard lit the flares and burned the man's feet down to the ankle bones, incinerating all flesh and foot bones to ash. He didn't stop there. Richard then utilized said flares again. This time, he removed the man's trousers and used the flares to burn his testicles, flaming them until the guy finally told him where the truck was hidden. The reason the guy held out for so long, which seems unlikely just for watches or money, was that he knew Richard's reputation, and he knew that the moment he told him where the truck was, he would be killed. So the only reason he was holding out was to see if Richard would give up first. So, the Gambino crime family. Richard had come to the attention of the notorious Roy DeMeo, who was part of the Gambino crew. DeMeo had taken control, quite literally, of the business that Richard worked for copying the film reels. Richard then, possibly foolishly, borrowed money from DeMeo that when chased for repayment, he couldn't immediately pay back. So DeMeo turned up at Richard's place of work with a few guys and pistol-whipped Richard, then struck him unconscious with the butt of a rifle. DeMeo was impressed at Richard taking the beating like a man with no mouthing off or pleading or whining. He had also heard about Richard from the De Cavalcante family, so he was impressed. So impressed he decided to hire Richard, but not without a trial first. Richard and DeMeo drove to Greenwich Village in Manhattan. DeMeo selected a random member of the public and said, "There, kill him." With no hesitation and no questions, Richard got out of the car, walked up behind the man who was walking his dog, and shot him in the back of the head. He then slowly walked back to the car, and him and DeMeo drove off. Richard would go on to work with DeMeo until DeMeo's death in the early 1980s. Richard would also work with the other six of the seven New York and New Jersey crime families. This in itself is very rare, as it is commonplace for mafia associates to work exclusively with single families. He would be sent on hits throughout the state, country, and beyond. One such hit in 1974, DeMeo would send Richard on a hit to Miami, instructed to inflict pain on the victim and bring back evidence of the guy's death. Upon arrival, it didn't take Richard long to find the man he was looking for. He let the man tie his down first of all, so that when he tried to get in his car and leave, he wouldn't be able to. Once the ties were let down, Richard waited. When the man saw his tires were flat, he went into the trunk to get a tire iron, at which point Richard apprehended him, taking him forcibly to a secluded beach. Richard would tie the poor soul to a tree and remove the man's trousers before grabbing him by the testicles, staring the man deep in the eyes and with all his strength tearing them from his body. Richard would say he took great enjoyment in showing them to the man in his hands. Next, Richard cut off the man's penis with a hunting knife and placed it and his testicles into a plastic bag as a trophy for his employers. He continued to slice thin strips of flesh from his body before he plunged the knife into the man's stomach, slicing it side to side. Richard then reached inside and pulled the man's intestines out while the man screamed in both horror and pain. Richard said that after this, he untied the man and dragged him into the sea by his ankle to leave him for the sharks or drowning, whatever got him sooner. Richard was getting pretty inventive with the ways he murdered people. He enjoyed trying out new methods and acquiring new skills. In mid-1975, for example, Richard was given a contract hit for a man who had angered a senior mafiosi. The man had been dating the mafiosi's daughter and had recently met the high-ranking gangster. The made man asked the young guy what he was intending with his daughter. Foolishly, he replied that he was just having fun with his daughter. And just like that, the senior made man gave Richard a contract to kill him and make him suffer. Now, Richard had just the idea for this one. He knew of a cave in the Pine Barrens from his days hunting, a cave with a huge population of rats. So, kidnapping his target and taking him to the cave, Richard cruelly tied the guy so he couldn't move. Then he wrapped strips of wet rawhide around his testicles, forehead, and arms, knowing that when rawhide dries, it retracts and gets tighter. So after a while, the man's balls, arms, and face were, as Richard puts it, tomato red and bulging. And before long, the rats smelled a meal. Slowly they nipped, bit, and tore tiny chunks of flesh from the man as Richard stood by taking photographs. Eventually, Richard would leave and let the rats have their way with the man, only to return a few days later to take more photographs for his employers. By the time he did return, Richard said, all that was left was bones. The rats had stripped the skeleton clean, while the man was still alive. The thing with rats is that they find a taste of human blood addictive for some reason. So once they have a taste for it, they can't get enough of it. They turn ravenous even. It was for this reason that Richard was able to commit this horrific method of murder multiple times, with each time the process getting faster and faster and the rats would get quicker to attack and strip the body of its flesh. In September 1983, Richard made a pretty big mistake. The body of Louis Mazgay was found in Orangetown, New York, with a bullet hole in the back of his head. Richard had tried to disguise Masgay's time of death by storing the corpse in a freezer for 2 years, but Richard didn't allow the body time to thaw before he disposed of it. The medical examiner found ice inside the body on a warm September day. The discovery made the authorities look a little closer at Masgay's murder, and eventually 5 unsolved homicides were linked to Richard, as he had been the last known person to see each of them alive. In 1985, the New Jersey Police Department and ATF special agents worked with Phil Solomine, a close friend of Richard's, for over 20 years. They wanted to get close to Richard. An ATF agent would pose as a fellow hitman and discuss with Richard how he wanted to hire him for a hit. Wearing a wire, they recorded Richard speaking in detail about how he would carry out the act. He was arrested on December 17, 1986, at a roadblock that had been set up waiting for him. A gun was found in his car. His wife was also charged with trying to prevent his arrest. Richard was charged with 5 murder counts, 6 weapons violations, attempted murder, robbery, and attempted robbery. In March 1988, Richard Leonard Kuklinski was found guilty of 2 murders. In all, Richard would be convicted of 5 murders and sentenced to 5 consecutive life sentences after further evidence was obtained after his initial 2 convictions. Barbara Kuklinski stated she was unaware of Richard's crimes. She admitted that she suspected he wasn't entirely open with her and suspected he was involved in nefarious activities due to the hours he kept, but she would never dream of asking him what he did when he left the house. Richard Leonard Kuklinski died on March the 5th, 2006. Thanks for listening to this 2-parter about the Iceman, everyone. We'll be back as soon as tomorrow night, so subscribe so you don't miss an episode. Also, follow us on Instagram at dead_souls_podcast for daily mysteries and dark history and podcast updates. You can also get extra rewards and extras by heading on over to our Patreon, which is at patreon.com/deadsouls. Show us some support and join the Dead Souls Social Club. So take care of yourselves, everyone, and sleep tight. And remember, stand firm as you enter the darkest night.
Law enforcement authorities have arrested one of the most notorious contract killers in state history. A self-employed Bergen County man is behind bars, charged with 5 murders, and prosecutors are investigating his involvement in dozens more.